Good evening, everybody. I am delighted to be with Lady Val Corbett this evening. You know, prison reform is at the heart of this channel. My internet presence started in 2004 with my blog, John's Jail Journal, exposing the conditions in Sheriff Joe Arpaio's jail. And we have continued in that vein ever since. So I was really happy when my friend Andrew Pritchard organized this with Val for this evening, because Val is doing such important work, which is what we are going to get to. So huge thank you for coming on first. Val?
Okay, thank you very much indeed for having me, Sean, and welcome to anybody who's out there listening to this. I suppose I should tell you how I got into prison reform. First of all, I was born in Cape Town, and my dream was to come to Fleet Street, which was in the mecca of journalism. And so I did. And my career has been in media. So I've worked for national newspapers, magazines, BBC television, script writing for television, novels, and so on. But I was married to a member of parliament, and he was somebody I admired. Apart from the love stuff, I actually admired him, and especially his private members bill, which is still law today, which is granting lifetime anonymity for rape victims in the courts and the media. But he was obsessed with politics. And I remember once lying in bed reading, and I happened to look over and see him looking at me in such a loving way. And so I said softly, you know, what are you thinking about? And he said, the Housing Finance Act. So right away I knew that this was somebody who was absolutely set in politics. He was my political mentor, my soulmate. And when he died in 2012, after a very short battle with lung cancer, I was obviously bereft. And you know, when somebody dies, you get lots of cups of tea and support. But then, after a few weeks or months or so, they reckon you'll be able to manage. But it's then that reality really strikes. And so it was at that stage when I was looking at television, trying desperately to find something to distract me. And I came across the Ryder Cup, a golf competition between America and Europe. And Europe won, which I was pleased about. And then the captain of the winning team dedicated the win to his friend, the Spanish golfer, Sebi Ballesteros, who had recently died. And he said these words, all men die, but some men live on. And I sat up, and it was a real eureka moment, because I suddenly realized that what I wanted to do and needed to do was to make and honor my husband's legacy. And he had a lot of campaigns and crusades, but the one that I thought was nearest to his heart was prison reform. He was passionate about not only prison reform, but prison education as well. And so I thought, he was also chair of the All-Party Penal Affairs Group in Parliament for 10 years until he died. And so I thought, this is the way that maybe I should go. So I went to the Prison Reform Trust, and we, in 2013, the Robin Corbett Award for Prisoner Reintegration was started. It's an annual award presented at the House of Commons, and it awards shares £10,000 between three people in the prison reform sector who do the most to support people from prison. And then in 2017, when we met a lot of people working in their own pond, we suddenly thought, wouldn't it be a good idea to work in a sea? And that was the start of the Corbett Network for Prisoner Reintegration, which I'll come to later. But for now, I want to talk about really the prison reform. As you know, we have a lot of problems at the moment. The capacity problem is terrible. And just want to do some crusading work here on behalf of the prison service, which is that normally people do 50% of their sentence. At the moment, they're going to do 40% because we haven't got the space in prisons. But they usually do 50%. People think, oh, they only do half the sentence. They do not do half the sentence. They do half in prison and half in the in the community under strict supervision. They're under license. And so any transgression, however small, they get chucked back, recalled. And there was something, there was a 13% increase in recalls. I think there were 12,500 from January who were recalled to prison. So it's not doing half the sentence. If we can get that through, I really would be very happy. But there's lots of other problems within the prison service apart from the capacity. And that's because we have started the US, what I call the revenge style of incarceration. Instead of, you know, lock them up, throw the key type of thing, instead of the Norwegian side. Now, the Norwegians think of prisons as a place of change, changing the mindset, trying to get them away from crime, and they're very successful. But there's another country that does the same thing and is doing brilliantly, and that's Holland. Holland is closing the prisons, whereas we are building more. And the reason they're closing them is that in 2007, they had 48,500 in prison. And today they have 11,500. And if you say, oh, well, you know, come on, Holland has only got 75 million people and we've got 69,000 million people. Well, let me tell you that in March, I'm very bad at figures, so I've got to have to write it down. March 24th, today, 134 prisoners we had per 100,000. 134 prisoners per 100,000. In Holland, they had 50 per 100,000. So you can see how good they are. And how did they do this? How did they get to the stage when they closed prisons? Well, they did it with three things really. Prevention, community service instead of incarceration, and rehabilitation. And this is the way that I really feel we should go. It's not going to be easy. It's going to be actually quite difficult, and it's not a quick fix. But unless and until we change the way we perceive people in prison, they're not inhuman. I mean, Robin used to say, prison isn't full of bad people. Prison's full of people who've done bad things, and most need a second chance. And the second chance is very necessary. I'll give you a couple of examples about that a bit later on. I think that the way that we deal with our prisons, the way that we perceive the public perception of prisons, we've got to change it, which is what they did in Holland. I mean, in Holland, there was a move afoot by a group of people to change public perception. They did so well that the Dutch government got involved. Of course, that has changed. They're a bit worried now because there's a very far-right, ultra-right government that's just come in, and they're worried that they might revert to what they were, but I hope they won't. So what we need to do is to think about second chances, because at the moment, people are coming out of prison. A lot of people are coming out of prison worse than they went in. And so what I want them to come out as is a returning citizen, somebody who can give back to the community. And I don't think that's too much to ask, but it'll take a long time. Now, we were all euphoric when James Timpson, who came in. For people who don't know James Timpson is, he's a very prominent chief executive of a very very successful chain of shops, and he has 10% of his workforce is from prison, and he's very carefully chosen from prison. And he has now become the Minister of Prisons, Parole and Probation. And he is absolutely adamant that only a third of the people in prison need to be there. There's only 6% of people in prison who are violent, by the way. So he's absolutely on the right track. He needs to do that. But of course, at the moment, there's virtually nothing he can do to change things because of this capacity problem. So I'm just hoping that that will be sorted out fast so that he can, do what he is supposed to do. Because I'm quite sure he came in and said to Keir Starmer, well, I'll come and do this, but I need to do this, this, and this. Because I'm sure he set down that. So now we come to the Corbett Network for Prison Reintegration. This has started, as I said, in 2017. And it's a coalition. As a matter of fact, I don't know how many members we've got, because we have so many joining at the moment. I think we're about 150, I think. We want to aim for 200 by the end of the year. I hope we'll get there. But anyway, it's a coalition of charities, social enterprises, community interest companies, and businesses with a social function to go from custody to community. And what they do is they work day by day with people who have come out of prison and who need housing, help, support. We've got a member, Maggie Walsh, of A Fairer Chance, who says when they come out of the prison, they need three things. They need something to do, somewhere to live, and someone who gives a damn. And in my opinion, the last one is probably the most important. So the housing situation is, I don't want to be too downbeat on this, but the housing situation is just dire, absolutely dire. Some prisons release people with a sleeping bag and a tent. And they do that, you know, because they know that there is nothing. And they, you know, we have a system of hostels which they can stay in, I think, for a couple of months or something. And some of them are quite good, but a lot of them are not. So there's a lot of recalls from hostels with drugs and things. So it's the housing situation, you know, put it on one side, bad. And then the people that they work with, the work is very hard. A custodial manager said to me once that if he inducts 10 people, most of them will have been in care. A lot of them won't have skills in reading and writing. A lot of them have addiction. Some have trauma. They won't have been employed, and they have very low educational standards. And most of them will have try to commit suicide at some stage in their lives. So people that they work with almost are predicated from birth to go to prison. So they are working with people like this, and so they go three steps forward and nine steps back, that kind of thing, and they go on and on and on, because we want to give them jobs. Jobs are absolute key. Let me give you some stats. We have the highest reoffending rate in Western Europe, and we lock up more people. So about 56%, something like that, of young men reoffend within 2 years. But that percentage goes down to 19% when they have a job. So it's a no-brainer. But we don't only do jobs. Some of our members do mentoring, coaching, education, and training. Anything that's needed. And the things they do, I'm just so admiring them. Recycling Lives, for instance, they meet people at the gate. They take them to a purposeful block of flats so that they have accommodation. They give them some time, to relax, and then they get them a job. Now, you know, you can't get better than that. There's a firm in Birmingham who have 75% of their workforce are people from prison. And they say the reason is they are committed, they're grateful, they're honest, they're reliable, and they're loyal. And the operations director said to me once, I sleep like a baby on a Saturday because I know that on Sunday they're going to be there. And they're working on HS2, so, you know, it's a big project they're working on. I can't think. My mind's got a course completely.
Well, you've had a question. You've had a question from a viewer, and the question is from AJ Henry. Is the answer community service with a wage?
Well, that's a very interesting concept. I don't know that because of the economic situation in this country, and also the economics of prisons. I'm not sure that's a goer. I think it's an excellent one, but I don't think that in the economic situation we have now, they would balk at it, I'm afraid. It's a good question, though.
If anyone else has got any questions, put them in the chat. We'll get them to Val. Thank you.
Yes, do. I mean, I like being interrupted, by the way. Now, what was I saying? This Birmingham company says, don't judge them on the past. Judge them on the abilities. And it makes a lot of sense, because 34% of the employers in this country say they will never, ever employ somebody from prison. So hard to get a job with it. Absolutely, absolutely. Very hard to get a job with a criminal record, because when you go for an interview, there's a little box that says, have you ever been convicted of a criminal offence? And if you tick that box, you don't get a job. We have got a crusade going called Ban the Box, because we think it's unfair. It is very difficult indeed to get it. There are some employers. XO Bikes, one of our members, have got two former drug lords who couldn't get a job because of their offences. And one is now, these are people who repair bikes and get a qualification to be a bike mechanic. And they are now working, you know, as it's sort of, I think, one in charge, they're in charge of people and things like that. So if you're a paedophile, you're looked after, having a record, and I said, understand, repeated follows, I don't understand the question. Sean, can you help
Lynn
me there?
It's just a comment. What Lynn is saying is that that paedophiles are taken care of, but other people are just left homeless. I think that's the point.
I haven't heard that paedophiles are being taken care of. In fact, people with sex offences are having real trouble. We had a centre for sex offences a little while ago, which was taken over by another charity. And I went round there, and they were saying that they needed to be self-employed. One was going for an HGV licence, and another one was trying to find... Self-employment for sex offenders are obviously one way forward, but I'm not sure I've heard anything that the paedophiles are looked after.
Val, earlier on, you know, you said your husband got lifelong anonymity for victims of rape.
Yeah.
And we've got a lady in the chat right now, Sheila, who was a survivor of Jimmy Savile.
Oh, right.
Yeah, so we interviewed her, and we understand the horrible things these survivors go through. Yeah. Do you think more needs to be done for survivors?
Oh, without a doubt. First of all, a lot of rape crimes are not being looked at. I think that the convictions for rapes are absolutely diametrically low, and I think that should be addressed, absolutely. I'm very proud of this, of my husband's bill, because... unless people want to be publicly named, and some of them are very courageous indeed to do that, you know, they can have lifetime anonymity. Hopefully, my husband always hoped that this would bring more people, because a lot of rape crimes are not ever reported. There's a huge number of rapes that are not reported. So he hoped that because of the anonymity, you know, and they've also changed, I believe, they've changed the way that they don't have to bring up previous sexual offense histories and things like that. I think they've, you know, made that better. It's still not a great thing to go through, I have to admit. But at least, you know, it's something to help.
You got a question from Andrew. Do you think more people with lived experience should be working in the criminal justice system?
Andrew, he's one of my members. Andrew, you are the absolute key example of people with a lived experience. My goodness, did you have lived experience with you? You were the major drug baron. I hope this is not going to get you into trouble. But you were absolutely, you came out of prison having served a long sentence saying, I'm going to change. And you have changed, and you are doing such great work with young people. And I always say to you, you should be so proud of yourself. And I'm proud that you're a member of the network. So, of course, we should have lived experience. If they have lived experience, they can understand what people are going through. So, you know, come on. Absolutely great. So I want to tell you about two cases where, because things are so bad at the moment, I want to leave people, hopefully, with a little bit of silver lining. Frankie. Frankie was a release from Peterborough Prison in 1 December. With £46, it's now £76, not enough, but they left with, he left with £46, no job, no house, no home, no nothing. And he was going to live with his nan. Well, he had done an in-course coding from one of our members, Code 4000. And it just so happened that, I don't know how they heard about it, but Lloyds Bank in Leeds wanted a coder. And so they got Frankie, Code 4000, got Frankie to Leeds. I mean, we had to, they had to, there was a lot of money to you know, for the cost to go from Peterborough to Leeds, and the flat, and the anyway, the Corbett network helped as well with other people. And he got there within 6 months. Lloyds went to Code 4000 and said, "Have you got any more like him?" And he's still there. The other thing is one of the Birmingham company member started an equine section. I said, "Why?" Now this is an Irish guy who knows about horses. And he said, well, because of Brexit, the horse racing industry needs a lot of staff for livery stables and so on. So he is now training people. And I went and saw this. And they were sitting in a kind of classroom with a blackboard and two jockeys, one a Grand National jockey. And people have never been near a horse, by the way, were being trained. And then they went and did the practical with the horse. And I saw that. And then they told me about this man who'd been in jail 10 times. And he went through this process. And he's now working in a livery stable far away from Birmingham. And he is looking after a horse that is worth £80 million in stud fees, a previous Derby winner. I have a photograph of that man. And I've never seen a man who is in love with the horse as much as this man is. His whole face was infused with love for this horse. It was lovely. Now, he will never reoffend. So, you know, we come to this state where we've got 87,000 men in prison and 5,000 women. And we have warehouses where they say that by 2029, there'll be probably 100,000 people in prison. Now, we can go that route. It's an easy route to go. But I maintain that, and by the way, they're not going to change, they're not going to close down the old Victorian type prisons. So they're going to use them as well. So I maintain that if we change the system, then we can also change how many people do not go to prison. I mean, does that make sense to people? Are there any other questions?
Yeah, I've got a question. So, you know, you referenced Norway, and in America, you've got prison guards, unions, and contractors, for example, telephone service contractors, donating millions to each political party. This keeps things like, you know, drug laws in place, to keep three strikes laws in place, to keep the prisons full. How do we get around that wall of money? Because it seems like the UK, highest incarceration rate in Europe now, it seems like we're just following the American model.
Well, this
versus
is what I'm saying. Yeah.
Scandinavia.
Well, this is my whole point in the beginning, Sean, was that we are in, to me, the two things that worry me about the American system. The first is that they get, they have the highest incarceration rate in the world, I think. I hope. Maybe not in China. I don't know. Anyway, in the Western world, shall we say.
They
have this concurrent thing. I've just been looking at a Netflix film where a man was convicted for 37 rapes, and he got 37 sentences. So he's going to, I mean, practically one 37-year sentence will probably be enough for him. But he had 37 consecutive sentences. So we don't have that here. But we have to get away from that. We have to get away from that system. I said that right in the beginning. We have to go the way that Holland and Norway are going. We have to change people within prison. And in fact, we have to change getting into prison. Now, prevention is really, really difficult because it involves whole structure of the community, local councillors, getting people, talking to young people, building more youth clubs. We had to have, apparently, I'm not British born, but I believe there were huge numbers of youth clubs, which were very, very well attended. And, you know, the crime rate at that stage was not down. Now we have knife crime. And the knife crime that Andrew Pritchard, you just mentioned, Andrew is starting an anti-knife campaign with a lot of people that he has got. And his idea is exactly that, getting the community involved, getting local schools. It's, as I say, not a quick fix, but it's one way forward. And we've got to go forward, Sean. We just have to. We can't do the same always as we've done before. So this government has come in, and I'm hoping that they have the nous, and they've got, I hope, good people there. There's also James Simpson started this employability boards within prisons to skill up people with jobs. And there's another problem, you know. I went to Rochester Prison, and they have a stonemason course there. And honestly, the quality was unbelievable. I couldn't believe it. But they had to have two members of staff there because of the tools. And so there were only about 10, maybe 8 or 10 people. And one of the men said, you know, I'm so glad I'm here because I've got a seal when I go home. When I get out of here, I can become a stonemason. But there were 53 on the waiting list. And of course, and he said weekends are so boring because the staff, you know, there's fewer staff on at weekends. And so they can't do anything. So they've got 53 people on the waiting list. And this is the same for many, many prisons. So there's that. So, you know, we've got a lot of problems, but we can get over this if we keep our nerve, change from the US system, go to the Scandinavian and Dutch system. It's not going to be easy. It's not going to be quick, but we should do it.
Well, you've answered all the questions, Val. Is there anything you'd like to say in conclusion to the viewers?
Well, in conclusion, I want them to imagine a loved one going into prison and coming out worse than he was. I mean, is that going to be satisfactory? Instead of coming out as a returning citizen and giving his all back to into the community, paying back. A lot of them want to pay back. And I think they should be given that chance. The second chance is the best chance they can get, and we have to give it to them.
And we've got your links in the description box. So for people watching then, you've got the CorbettNetwork.com. What is at that website?
That is for the Corbett Network for Prisoner Reintegration.
And why should people go and why should people go and check your website out? What's the incentive?
Well, it'll give them a lot more information than I've been able to give on this very short talk. it will give, and if any organization is interested in becoming a member, they can do it through there. If anybody's interested in sponsoring us, please do. If anybody wants to give us £1 million, I'm free. so it gives you a lot. There's a lot of there's a lot of videos on there with people who have been through the system, and a lot of people who trying to employ people from prison. And so there's an awful lot of information there. So I do urge people to go down that route.
All right. Thanks, Val. I'm going to close the show, and thank you for spending time with us this evening, and good luck with what you're doing.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure. And thank you so much for allowing me to talk to everybody.
You're welcome. Thanks to you, Val, and thanks to Andrew as well. Cheers. Bye-bye. Bye. Yep. So all of Val's links are in the description box below this video. Like I said in the beginning, you know, prison reform, prison policy, it all seems to be upside down right now. You've got all these vested interests trying to profit from things when they should be addressing the root causes of the crime, such as youth centres, such as preventing childhood trauma, protecting young people from the kind of traumas that Sheila went through with Savile, giving kids things to do instead of just letting them run around on the streets of London forming drug gangs. Drug policy should be overhauled. You know, weed is the most dealt drug in the world. And all the violence that's around it, when that could be simply solved by making that legal and taxing it and putting money into education. My philosophy is more education and less incarceration. Send people like Andrew Pritchard into the schools so he can let the young people know about the consequences of getting involved in this kind of stuff. And hopefully that will prevent them from going in there and becoming institutionalized. We see so many people just go in, small offenses perhaps, and they become hardened in prison, make their criminal connections and get out. And it just becomes an absolute way of life for them. But at £60,000 a year of taxpayers' money per person, the private prisons are banking off this at the taxpayers' expense. Corrections Corporation of America were boasting in their annual report to their shareholders, our profit growth is guaranteed because they keep coming back. And here we are following the American model instead of following the Scandinavians, who give the prisoners educations, give the prisoners job skills, and lo and behold, they don't reoffend. In America, from what I saw, they give you $50 on the gate when you're getting released. It's drug and gang infested mayhem all the way through it. The guards are bringing the drugs in, neo-Nazi gangs, etc. They give them $50 on the gate and say, have a nice day. And they know as soon as they come back, $60,000 a year of taxpayers' money per person. The contracts are in the billions right now with the private prisons, and the political contributions to both parties, Republicans and Democrats, are in the tens of billions. So why the hell are we following the Americans? It's that wall of money, and that is something that's got to be addressed. All right, so Lady Val Corbett's links are in the description box. I'll just tell you guys what else we've got coming up. So right now we've got John Wedger going live with Ron Swanson, Crime Theory on this channel. And then later in the week, we've got the Daily News Flash tomorrow afternoon. We've got the Royal Mess Live coming up tomorrow evening. And then we've got, at the end of September, we have got my collaboration with Sammy the Bull Gravano and his son, where we're all going to be talking about the rival ecstasy rings for the first time. So, if you are tuned in now, please go over to John Wedger and Ron Swanson. John Wedger is an ex-Scotland Yard detective. He's a regular contributor to the channel. He's a whistleblower, and he really is very well researched. He's like an encyclopedia of true crime. So, if you want to check that out right now, it is live on the channel. Take care out there, wherever you are in the world. Much love and respect, and we will see you in the next stream. Thank you.